And we're back. You know who it is alongside me, Mike Temple. I'm Alex Swan. You got it locked in to the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu. We got a great show planned for y'all. I'm thinking you'll like it. Action-packed. We'll get some Olympic talk for you. A lot of sports news nationally fluttering around at sports world. Some DU men's and women basketball talking about the big wins. Of course, the Dubs. We'll see how the Warriors can rebound after that tough loss to the Bobcats. And, of course, the top five.
Stay tuned. This is the Temple of Swan. You are tuned in to the Temple of Swan here at radio.dominican.edu in the beautiful Dominican University of California, San Rafael campus right now. A little overcast, though, for us here in San Rafael.
Some rain throughout the day.
Yes, and we saw some rain last night. Didn't expect it coming out of the basketball games that we did. So nice to get a little bit of rain, not too cold yet. So getting a little bit of best sides here at Dominican. We're going to start off with some basketball talk, and that is both our men's and women's team, who have been in some tough competition lately, taking action in huge games. And for the listeners who don't know, maybe we do the radio broadcast for the basketball teams at radio.dominican.edu. Our next one is Thursday the 13th, the day before Valentine's Day, against Notre Dame Dana Muir. So stay tuned for that broadcast. Temple, Swan, and Stuart Horn will be on the call for that one. So make sure you stay tuned for that. 5:30 and 7:30 are the times. But getting back to what we've seen so far throughout the season, we'll start with the men's 16-7 overall record, 10-5 in league. They've got five straight wins and three since our last broadcast. We got to update you on those. They beat Point Loma 68-58. They went on the road to a tough environment, beat number 20 ranked Dixie State 97-88, and then just last night they beat Holy Name 76-65.
So me and you were on the couch. We're hanging out. We're getting the updates for the Point Loma game. DU's up big. Haysbert's going off in the first half. And we're thinking, all right, hold your own. Finish out the second half. Little do we know, here comes Point Loma. Here comes the run. Here comes the onslaught. Just like Dixie State, Point Loma's got a pretty good home crowd too. But some big shots by Haysbert, Taplin, Hayes. They end up getting the victory. They beat Point Loma by 10, feel their way out. They're feeling good traveling to Dixie State. And Temple and I were talking about, okay, they've done their job right there. Enough to split those two games between Point Loma and Dixie State would have been a solid road trip. But they went beyond that. They go to Dixie State. We talk about it again. We're hitting each other up, phone call. Dude, DU's up 3 at half. And we're like, wow, they are playing Dixie hard in that ruckus crowd. We're talking about it last night on the broadcast. There's 3,000+ people.
Yeah, 3,482, I think, was the confirmed attendance. In a Division II basketball game, that Dominican hasn't seen that kind of crowd or faced, have been in that kind of environment at least this season. So definitely a new aspect to the game for them.
That's the toughest atmosphere by far. Probably in the Pac West. They go on the road. Dixie State's hanging the whole game, but DU's up a possession, up two possessions. Dixie State will find a way to get it down to one. Matt Hayes hit a clutch three to put DU up by 5, and that's what really put Dixie State in a bind. They beat Dixie State by 9, 97-88. They hang 97 on Dixie State in Utah. Dixie State is ranked number 20. So then we start to figure out, wow, DU is for real. Broadcast last night, they beat Holy Names by 11. But this is where the downside hurts, and we're going to get into it right away. The Golston injury. What did you see? We were on Media Row. What did you see when he went for that attempted layup?
Yeah, and this was the only negative spot of the whole game last night. And during this whole win streak for the Penguins, 5 wins in a row, really the only negative thing that we've seen during the win streak was the Golston injury. He's going up for a layup, and he actually decides to do a jump stop at the free throw line. And on the jump stop, I think it was his left knee, looked like it gave out. And what I saw, I mean, it's kind of hard to focus on the game and call the game while actually seeing exactly what happened, but his knee looked like it buckled. I didn't hear anything because I had the headphones on, but it looked like it buckled pretty badly. He hit the floor right away, didn't get up for a good 2 minutes. The crowd was quiet. Everyone was looking on. He was grimacing in pain.
He looked like he was hurt pretty bad.
Yeah, and it was definitely a serious moment for the Penguins as he's their leading scorer, I think number 5 in the whole Pac West in scoring, something like that now. And he's been in numerous honors for the Pac West Conference. So definitely one of the best players, a key cog to this team. And then you see him go down like that. And he, like we said, he stayed down for 2 minutes with that knee injury. Then he had to have teammates help him up and carry him off the court because he couldn't put any weight on it. So we're waiting on the word. And I was hoping to see him in class today, but he was not there. He told Brad that he had a knee injury, so he wasn't going to make it to class. I was going to ask him some questions, but couldn't get any information on that. So they're going to wait the MRI or the doctor's thing to see what happens with that.
We saw him walk out of the locker room, had the whole leg taped up, and he was able to put some weight on it, which makes you think, okay, maybe there's no tear in his ACL or MCL. Everybody saw what happened to Bowman. He couldn't walk, put any weight on it. He got carted off. So to see him put weight on it at least makes me think he will return, knock on wood, he will return at least at some point during the season.
Yeah.
At one point. If it's 2 games before the conference tournament, if it's 1 game before the conference tournament, if he misses the rest of the regular season but can play in the conference tournament, that's a win for DU. If he can come back earlier than that, obviously, that's ideal.
Yeah, you want him back as early as possible, like you said. But the one good thing about the timing of this injury, not that any injury is good or you want to have an injury during a season, but the one really just kind of silver lining to this whole thing is they have a game next week on Thursday, so they get a full week of rest. And even if he can't play in that one, they play on Saturday against Holy Names, a team that they've proven they could beat without him. So at least that's 2 games in a row to where you still need Golson to play, but even if he's not playing and you just want him to get healthy, those are 2 games you can afford to maybe have him out.
I agree. They get the win last night. There's no haze either. He has the flu. No injury there. So that's okay. They were able to get it done. Schwartz Emiston comes in off the bench, and they don't really miss a beat at all. Both those players, Hayes and Christopher Schwartz Emiston, can shoot the basketball. They can go inside. They're around the same height, 6'3". When they're both playing at the same time, they got lethal weapons on the outside. But yeah, the main concern is Golson. They're in fourth out of 13 teams in the Pac West. And Temple puts together a beautiful bracket scenario, a little bracketology Pac West style.
Yeah, this is what you do when you're... I have no classes on Friday, so after my last class today, I decided just to brainstorm some ideas for the playoffs, and I wanted to be like my own little Joe
Lenardi.
It was
beautiful.
Yeah, for ESPN. And, you know, that's just, it gives me an excuse not to work on my homework that might be due Sunday, you know? Just something that I could do that's due today, because the show is today. You're listening to the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu. For those who just joined us, and we are talking about Dominican basketball and their playoff hopes. First, before I get into that, I want to talk about the next game a little bit before we get into the whole playoffs, just make sure we're covering everything. They are going against Notre Dame Data Mir, which is Thursday the 13th. Men will be starting at 7:30. And NDNU is 1 game out of 6th place. They are currently in 7th for the playoff standings. So it's a team that's going to be hungry coming in here. And that night actually is going to be academic night for the whole athletics program. They are unveiling their 4th consecutive banner of being Pac West Academic Achievement Award. I don't know how to say that, but they've won the Pac West Academic Achievement Award 4 years in a row. And on Thursday, they're going to be unveiling the banner that has signified best team GPA, best school GPA as an athletic program. So that's pretty awesome. That'll be happening Thursday. President Mary Marshall will be here, will be in the gym. Athletic director Christopher Lee, just everyone who's involved with the athletic program will be there.
It's big time. And we just had one rivalry game against Holy Names. Now we get another one next week. We're treated to 2 rivalry games back to back. That's nice. I'm pumped. I know you're pumped, especially being on Media Row. You came from Notre Dame, Dana Muir.
I did.
What was the team looking like last year compared to this year?
And that's the thing. The thing about this year's Notre Dame team is there's almost no one who played on the team last year or at least no one who got significant minutes from last year's team to this year's team. The coach for NDNU, which is Coach Puo, he likes to recruit JC players or juniors coming in who only have 2 years of athletic eligibility. So he's bringing those guys in. That's why they always have a new team. Every 2 to 3 years, they got new guys contributing. This year's team lost their number one scorer midway through the season. I don't know exactly what happened, but he's lost. So they lost their best player. And ever since that time, they've been sort of slipping out of the standings because they were just a half a game away from DU before Dominican pulled on the win streak and Notre Dame went on the opposite end and started losing. So you're going to see an interesting team from Notre Dame, Danny Muir. They like to play down low. They have two guys down low who are beasts inside. But other than that, their point guard is kind of inconsistent. So we're going to see what kind of Argonaut team we get in the Collins Center. And like you said, it's a rivalry game. So you wouldn't expect anything other than a great effort from both teams.
Not at all, especially with no Golston. That will be a hinder for the DUs. Jumping over now into the playoff talk, DU's hot. They've got 5 wins in a row. You touched on that earlier. Magic number stands at 2. And they clinch a playoff spot in the post-conference tournament.
Yeah.
In Point Loma, San Diego. They got 3 games at home remaining, 2 on the road. Where do you see, what's the ideal situation for DU if they can somehow pull out at least their 3 home games? Can they still be in the top 3 seeding?
I don't even think this team is going to be settling for that sixth place seed. The 2 is the magic number to get into the playoffs, but this team has much higher expectations. They want to be league champs. And that's what everyone, you talk to the team, you could talk to Taplin, he's been quoted on it multiple times, or Golson or Hayes. You ask any of these guys, their goal is to be league champs. And what we've seen throughout the games at the Collins Center, they have the ability to be conference champions this year. They've beat Chaminade, they've beat Dixie, 2 of the top 3 teams in the conference. So they are not settling just to make the playoffs. And because of that fact, and the reason that they've won 5 games in a row here late in the season, I think it's very possible that this team can move into that number 3 seed at least. The 2 seed is a little bit farther stretched because of that 4-game losing streak they had in the middle of the season, but I think number 3 seed is what they're looking at, and currently they're only 1 game back from the 3 seed, which is Dixie, and plus you got Dixie coming in to San Rafael to play another game, so that's going to be 1 against a team that you're trying to chase right now, which is always good in a playoff hunt.
And that's attainable, and who knows what happens to Chaminade, their game and a half above DU. If they drop another game, seedings are all getting jumbled up. DU has a chance to jump to number 2. And if you hit number 2, you're riding high going down to San Diego.
Yeah, and you get that first round bye that every team wants. You don't have to play on Thursday. Instead, you get to skip the day, play on Friday, and get a lower seed than you, which is what every team wants to do. That's why you're shooting for a top 2 seed.
And it's big, because then you avoid Cal Baptist. You don't have to see them until, hypothetically, if you can run the table and get to the championship.
Yeah, and Cal Baptist has proven to be the number 1 team throughout the conference season. Only 1 loss all year, and it was in conference 2 at Azusa, at a tough Azusa team. So Cal Baptist has proven that they are an elite team, and Dominican feels like they can contest with them, but they don't want to see them until that championship game, like you said. So if you can get into that top 2 seed range, which is obtainable right now, only a game and a half behind Chaminade, then that's definitely what they want to be. And Chaminade right now, losers of 2 straight in overtime, so they're kind of reeling the opposite way that Dominican is. And you and Stu had the call against the Chaminade game. What did you see from them late in the game?
Bad execution late. But one thing that they do, they can hit the clutch 3. There was multiple times where DU had cut it to 4 or 5. Bang, 3 goes down. It's back to 8. They were down 9, 3 minutes to go. DU works to come back. But Chaminade, they got, the big, big man down low. And whenever you got outside shooting with a big presence down low, not only does it help your offense to crash the boards if there's a miss, but then you have the tower of trees inside. Taplin attacks, Hayes attacks, Golston attacks, and there's the big center. I can't place his name right now.
Kwani?
Okay.
Are you talking about the guy from Chaminade?
Yeah, I'm talking about the big center for Chaminade. I can't remember his name at the time, but he's a tree. And they're a tough team. DU had to grind that victory out in overtime, and they played about a perfect 3 minutes that they could. Booker T. Harris helped them out coaching-wise, great decisions in overtime. But when you drop two straight in OT like Chaminade has, that takes a bind on your confidence a little bit.
Yeah, and they got three games left versus the top five in the conference, so they're definitely going to be tested down the stretch. And like we said, they're coming into Dominican's. No, they're not playing Dominican anymore, but they're going to play Dixie and BYU Hawaii. Dixie right now number three, BYU Hawaii number five. So they're going to be tested late in the season. Their opponent record for the rest of the season is 51-55. And in comparison, Dominican's opponent record down the stretch is 25-40. So you can see where Dominican has a favorable schedule, and the stars are really aligning right now for Dominican to make that late season push.
Then you have a hot BYU team trying to creep up with the contending Dixie State. You know Dixie State's going to be coming in on February 20th. They're going to want revenge. That's going to be the blackout night. That's going to be a huge game. Listeners, please, if you can attend at least one game, this is going to be it.
Yeah,
it's going to be a dandy.
And on top of the blackout night, it's also Ron Powell tribute night, which is the sad story of Ron Powell, a former Dominican player and a former Dominican University basketball coach, passed away due to cancer. No, due to a heart attack instead. It's going to be a sad day to, but a good tribute is what I want to say. It's a good fun. All the proceeds are going towards his memorial fund and to help his family out, the residents from Marin. So it's going to be just an all-around huge game for both the community, the fans, the friends, the family. Just everyone's going to be united, and it's going to help Dominican hopefully ride a good game against Dixie.
Dixie State, BYU Hawaii, both teams, they're on the heels of DU, and they see it. They'll be ready. You never want to look back to the teams that are behind you, but they'll feel it out. They'll find their way. Even if they have no Golston, they recognize where they are in the standings, and they recognize where they can be at the end of the season, and they'll take care of business. But like you said, that's going to be a great, great night. Not only the tribute of the tragic death of Powell, but now you got blackout night, and it's going to be a dandy. That's all I can say. Finishing up, rounding out that mini bracketology right there, I'm liking where DU's sitting after these three games. If you asked me where they would be prior to the Loma, Dixie State, and Holy Names ball games, I don't know if they would be sitting at number three. I couldn't tell you that.
Yeah.
And I'm impressed. I thought all those wins, very deserving. Give a round of applause to the Dominican men as we throw it over to the Dominican women, because they are also hot. They got a rivalry win victory over Holy Names. 64-61 by three. That one got dicey late. But their winner's a 4 out of 5. We had the call yesterday. What were you impressed with out of Coach Chambers' squad?
What I was impressed with was the way that they play defense. They are always consistently giving 100% effort on the defensive side of the ball. This team, we both know they're not very good from the field. They don't shoot the ball too well, which is why most of their games are scored in the 50 to 60 range. But where they win these games and why they've won 4 out of 5 is because their effort on the defensive side, and they are rebounding a crazy amount. Sarah Nelson and Hyatt and Quaywan Owens helped the Penguins out-rebound Holy Names by 17 boards last night. I mean, that's a huge number, and that's the reason why they won by 3. Without those rebounds and without that defensive effort against a very good offensive team, Dominican would not have won that game, and they were lucky to win that game by just 3 points. They were up 14 with like 5 minutes left to go, and the lead dwindled down to 1. Then they got a miraculous shot from Jasmine Cox to push the lead to 3. And then they got a turnover with 12 seconds left and gave Holy Names another chance to get a buzzer-beating 3, but they elected for the 2 and missed the layup, so Dominican won by 3. Just a crazy game all around, but that's not the point anymore because they won and their winners are 4 out of 5.
They got 4. Now you get NDNU coming in, who's 3-10 in the conference. DU sees that on the schedule, another rivalry game on your home floor. You want to win. You got to get that to stay in contention. Right now, they're 6 in the playoff standings due to the 4 teams ineligible for the candidacy rule that you have to sit out a certain number of years before you can play in post-conference tournaments. They're in 6th. Top 6 go. NDNU comes in. Better record goes to DU. you're thinking, this is another winnable game we got to have. Got to go to get 5 out of 6 now.
Yeah, I'm claiming the next game as a must win. It's the only team that has a legitimate chance of catching you in the sixth spot. Right now, they sit at 3 conference win. Dominican has 5. No, Dominican has 6. So the Argonauts are going to come in here knowing that they're playing for a must-win situation. Their season's on the line. If they lose this game, Dominican only needs to win one more game over the rest of the season to clinch. So if Dominican can win this game, it really almost puts the nail in the coffin on the Argonauts' season, and it books the ticket to San Diego for the Penguins. So hopefully they come out with that fire and tenacity on the defensive side to really make a statement and win this game.
And talking about a little bit of yesterday's ball game against Holy Names, we saw Carly Holbrook flourish in not only her three-point shooting, but her inside game as well. She got minutes down the stretch. We usually don't see her on the floor under 2 minutes when it's crunch time. She gets it done in numerous ways, and Coach Chambers found her on the floor with Quaywan Owens, Cox, Nelson, and Yamauchi. Marshall came in as well to spell her a little bit. I'm seeing Carly Holbrook is a main piece along with Quaywan Owens to continue their success. They need that outside shooting. Holy Names went zone. It gave DU a little bit of problems down the stretch, and I think you're going to see more zone not only from the Argonauts but from other teams in the conference with these last 5 Pac West matchups.
Yeah.
I think you need Holbrook out there to space the floor. Marshall hit a couple threes too.
Yeah, and one thing we saw from Holbrook that we didn't see in the beginning of the season was her getting to the paint and finding a way to get her own shot inside the key. We made a joke about it probably maybe 2 weeks ago. Holbrook had 85% of her shots from behind the arc, and that is a crazy amount if you watch basketball or know anything about the stats. If you have 85% of your shots behind the three-point line, you're just known as a crazy shooter, and they'll just come out to you and they'll
close out.
Yeah, exactly. They'll close out hard. So I think Holbrook and Coach Brianna Chambers talked about that, and they made a real point of it to get her inside. And we saw it last game. She was huge both on the offensive rebounds and getting to the paint where she could either dish off or finish strong inside the key. And she was her, Quaywan Owens, Cox, and Nelson right now, they're playing their best ball right at the end of the season.
You can't ask for more than that. And it seems like the defensive tenacity's picked up. They're getting after it. Not only in the press, but when they fall back in the half court, we saw the great denial defense, the boxing out, getting in the passing lanes, especially Quaywan Owens.
Yeah.
How many tipped passes did she have last night?
It seemed like every pass that was going her way was either tipped or deflected or either bothered. It made a tough catch for Sonia Aguilar, who was the leading scorer, number 2 in the Pac West. We did not see or call her name that much because of the defense of Quaywan Owens.
Going back to that last possession, do you get the ball to Aguilar? You're down 3.
Yeah, run it over. What happened again? Because some of these listeners might not listen here at radio.dominican.edu. You listen to the Temple of Swan. Swan's going to give you a nice little small glimpse of the recap of what happened at the end of the game.
DU's up 3. They're going to get fouled. Inbound goes Yamauchi. She loses the handle. Turnover. Underneath the basket, Holy Names has the inbound now on the baseline.
With like 10 seconds.
A good 10 seconds left. You can go for a quick 2, or you can go for the tie. They're down 3. You can shoot from the outside. If maybe you go to Aguilar. They don't go to Aguilar. They go to the big lady, Fitzpatrick. She's the center. She's having a whale of a game. She had a monster double-double. She has a good look at it and blows the layup. They don't even elect a foul. Brain laps.
Yeah, they ran back on defense. I don't know why.
Still don't understand.
There was 5 seconds left, so it still could have been elongated the game. Yeah.
Exactly. Game over. But Sonia Aguilar, what we were talking about, is the number 2 PacWest scorer in the game. Best player on that team. And we knew it. Dominican knew it. If you're Aguilar, don't you want the Rock down 3 to chance a tie? If you're Curry, if you're Durant, if you're LeBron,
yeah.
If you're anyone else in the league that's their best score
and number 2 in the league. Number 2 in the league, and they didn't even pass it to her.
Don't you want the Rock to tie?
Yeah, I feel like I should have paid attention to her reaction and her reaction towards the coach.
I didn't catch it either.
Yeah, I was too focused on wondering why they weren't fouling. But if I'm Sonia Aguilar, you've got to be mad that you didn't even touch the ball in the last possession. Like, she could have orchestrated maybe a driving kick or something, because her ball handling skills were tremendous, and she is a great all-around player. So it was kind of weird that the coach drew up a play to get Fitzpatrick the ball. Even though she was having the best game, I think you got to get the ball in your best player's hands at that point.
I agree. Coach Covell, he had a good play call. It didn't execute, so we can always go back to the what-ifs. And, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda is always 100% right. And I thought, why go to Fitzpatrick when you got the second PacWest scoring leader on your team? Anyways, Diu gets the victory. Great win. They grinded it out late. Couple big buckets by Cox and Holbrook to push that lead to 5 late. But then we got women bracketology as well.
And it's crazy.
Mike Lenardi drew this up. I'm going to call you.
Thank you.
Mike Lenardi.
Mike Lenardi Temple. Mike Lombardi. I said like Lombardi. Mike Lenardi. But yeah, we didn't think this situation was even possible at the beginning of the season. The Penguins had gone 10-plus games without a win. They were just entering conference play. Things were not looking good. They were not playing good at all. And then something turned around after that first win, like we talked about during all of our broadcasts at the games. We're like, once they get this first win, things can definitely change. And we've seen that this season. They've been able to really just put on a nice stretch toward the end of the season.
You're an athlete. We've played ball in high school. You drop 10 in a row, you're in the cellar. You wonder, can we buy a win? We're doing everything we can to buy a win. They get a win. And over those first 10 losses to these last 4 wins that we've seen, I've seen a near completely different team that takes the court.
It's polar opposite team. Definitely. Like the attitude, the morale, the team chemistry, everything has just gotten so much better from where it was maybe just 8 games ago. And it's really noticeable just because we're right next to the court. It's really noticeable from the coaching standpoint, from the players we're seeing, from the way they're playing defense. Like you said, they're getting tenacity, getting after the ball. It's really, like you said, a polar opposite team from the beginning of the season.
So DU stands at 6-9. They trail University of Hawaii Hilo, which they got them by winning percentage. They're at 5-7. Dixie State is at 6-7. Dixie State's in 4th. Hilo's in 5th. DU's in 6th, but this is by far not over yet.
Yeah.
They could be looking at a top 4 seed in the conference.
They really could, and they beat Hilo this season. They beat Dixie already once. They're going to come into the Collins Center for the second matchup, for the rematch. Dominican's proven that they're almost better than both these teams already at this point in the season right now.
Is this team better than their record shows?
Yeah, they're definitely better than their record. I think we've noticed that in the last couple of games. If this team was being judged on the second half of the season, then their record would be kind of dictating the way they're playing right now. But the record right now standing at 6 wins, 6-15, you're thinking, oh, this might be an easy win if you're coming in here to play against the Lady Penguins. Oh, 6-15, we should handle this team. But what you haven't noticed is the way they're playing lately. Winners 4 of 5. Dominican is hitting their stride at the right point, which is making this interesting argument for them maybe even getting the 4 seed.
If you're an opposing coach, the worst thing for them to do would to bring up tape, highlight tape, from DU in the first half of the season.
Yeah,
because you'd get nothing out of that, of how DU's playing ball right now. You need to really monitor the last couple games that DU's thrown together, because it's a whole different ball. Like you said, polar opposites. I'm proud of how they have responded. As an athlete, that takes a lot to pull yourself up, and as a team, pick yourself up and still compete and bring yourself back and a chance to play in the conference tournament.
And that shows a lot about the senior leaders on the team. When you consider yourself, you're a captain and your team's not doing good, everyone wants to be like, talk back to you. Why aren't they doing well? Why can't you get your team turned around? And it's nice that the captain stayed composed and kept this team focused on the goal, which is to get to the playoffs. Because right now it's showing off Roldan, Quayvon Owens, Cox, all of them. All the seniors are doing a great job keeping this team focused. And really, that's why they've been able to go trend upward now.
I agree. Your true leaders will show when things are not going the way you want it. They'll keep the positive spirit and the composure, and they rallied. Unbelievable.
They do have Notre Dame, Danimir, coming into the Collins Center, the 7th seeded team, the only team that looks like they have a chance of catching that number 6 seed. Notre Dame, Danimir, the women's team has 2 straight losses. They have an opponent record of 52-41 in their final stretch of games. They have the toughest schedule remaining of the three teams that Dominican's going to be in competition with. Things aren't looking good for them, and Dominican can make things even worse for the Argonauts with a win on Thursday.
And what's even greater is DU's hot. Hilo, four straight losses. Dixie State's dropped two in a row. Argonauts, like you mentioned, they've dropped two in a row. Not Dominican. They're trending upwards. These teams are trending downwards. And if they can get to that number four spot, they're going to be hyped up going to the conference tournament.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what they're shooting for.
I want to go down and watch them, to tell you the truth. I want to go down and check the teams.
Why would you go down and just watch them when you could do the radio?
Oh, see? Man. If that is an opportunity, that'd be a dream. A little conference tournament action down in Point Loma. I could be getting way too far ahead of myself, but
hey, it's
I want to check them out.
It's the thought that counts. You could stream the stats like we always do, but that's not that fun.
Live, man. It's all about the live action.
It's funny
because
we'll be watching a game, and like people who want to listen to a Dominican game, say they're from Hawaii, they get so excited when they find out that they can listen on the radio. And then we try to do that for other teams, say Dominican's going to Dixie or Dominican's going to Point Loma. We have to follow the stats because they don't have a radio broadcast streaming live to us. I mean, it's just so different.
And every time we're following the stats, Taplin goes in for a layup, and he gets fouled. We're wondering, how'd Taplin go? Is it a fast break?
Is
he go coast to coast?
Yeah, because you know that dude could jump, so it's like it's crazy.
And then you see technical foul. You wonder, what just happened? Did they tangle up or what happened? Yeah.
Oh, man. I wish other schools did like we did to get the radio broadcast going.
I hear you, man.
Because the stats just aren't the same, like you said.
It's not. With any sport, it's not the same.
During that Point Loma game for the men's, there was two technical fouls for the Penguins, and the Point Loma also had two technical fouls. So I know it was getting chippy, but I don't know what happened because I wasn't there or listening to a radio call of it. It's frustrating.
Speaking of tees, we had a tee yesterday. Freshman losing their composure. Robinson tried to go for a steal. Might have been clean. He might have hacked the arm. He's coming around on a Haysbert as he's posting up, and he immediately spikes the ball, and it flies in the air. Good. 30 to 40 feet.
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking. That was a total freshman move by him.
It was like, man, you completely just lost focus there for a good 4 to 5 seconds because as an athlete, there's no way you can even contest. That's not going to be a technical foul.
Yeah. It's the ref was surprised. And he was like, that just happened. Then he has to get his whistle out. It's like, well, that's a technical. They just made it easy on me, and there was no argument from Robinson, the player, about it because he was just such a dumb play. And at the time when that technical happened, it was a one-point game. It was the first half, and Dominican was really struggling to separate themselves from the underdogged Holy Names Hawks. They finished the first half only up by one, so that was at a key point in the game when he took that technical. Really just dumb play.
It was, and that just shows you, especially the other teammates and your opponent, Dominican, that, oh, we can get in this guy's head.
Yeah.
If I'm going to hit a three in your eye, you know you're going to be hearing me talking a little bit in your ear when I'm D-ing you up.
Yeah, get him egged on some more.
Yeah,
and yeah,
Reggie Miller style.
We really didn't see that much from him in the second half. Speaking of that, I think he hit like one more three, but nothing really. He wasn't asserting himself, so that could have been a huge swing point in the game also. Just something we heard. And this is the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu. We just gave you the full lowdown on Dominican sports, well, basketball, because we call that. Make sure you tune into our next game, which is Thursday the 13th against Notre Dame. Dana Muir University will be on the call here. Stay tuned. We'll be getting back to you with some other college basketball, but this is some D1 talk. So stay tuned at the Temple of Swan, radio.dominican.edu. You got that sun, tan, skirt, and boots. Waiting on you to look my way and scoop your little hot self over here. Girl, hand me another beer, yeah. All them other boys wanna wind you up and take you downtown, but you look like the kind that likes to take it way out. Out where the cornrows grow, roll, roll my boat. Floating down the Flint River, catch us up a little catfish dinner. Gonna sound like a winner when I lay you down and love you right. Yeah, that's my kind of night. My
sit down on my diamond plate tailgate. Put in my country ride, hip hop mixtape. Little Conway and little T-Pain might just make it rain. You can hang your t-shirt on a limb. Hit that bank and we can ease on in. Soak us up a little moonlight. You know I know what you like, yeah. All them other boys wanna wind you up and take you downtown, but you look like the kind that likes to take it way out. Out where the cornrows grow, roll, roll my boat, floating down the Flint River. Catch yourself a little catfish dinner. Gonna sound like a winner when I lay you down and love you right. Yeah, that's my kind of night. Yeah, that's my kind of night. My kind of, your kind is this kind of night. We dance in the dark and your lips land on mine. Oh, gonna get our love on. Oh, time to get our buzz on. All them other boys wanna wind you up and take you downtown, but you look like the kind that likes to take it way out. Out where the cornrows grow, roll, roll my boat, floating down the Flint River. Catch yourself a little catfish dinner. Don't it sound like a winner when I lay you down and love you right. Yeah, that's my kind of night. Yeah, that's my kind of night. That's my kind of night.
And we're back. Going to get into some college basketball. March Madness around the corner. You're listening to the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu. And March Madness, I know you too, it's one of our favorite times of the year because there's so much emotion going on with these college athletes in the tournament.
Yeah, I think behind the World Cup and then you take the Summer Olympics, I would place March Madness basketball at number 3. And the crazy thing about it is March Madness happens every year. So we get this great joy, this jubilee in us every year when the Olympics only happen every 4 years. The Summer Olympics actually only happen every 4 years. Then the World Cup is every 4 years. So that's more of a excitement thing for once in a while. But the March Madness happens every year. There's always upsets. I couldn't be more excited about this year because this year's slate seems to be, this year's teams seem to be kind of wider apart in terms of there's no great teams. Like the parity in college basketball right now is out of this roof.
And that's what makes it so great. Because I'd say most years you have maybe 3, sometimes 4 teams that really separate themselves from the field. And you think, all right, they could run the table. Not all of them can. But usually a lot of the nation is thinking, okay, they can run the table. And sometimes that will happen. They'll run through to the Sweet 16 or to the Elite 8 and not really get tested. But that is not the case at all this year. There will be this. I think this tournament is going to be filled with upsets.
Yeah, we were talking about it just before we went on the show. I think a 1 versus 16 matchup might even present a problem. And that never happens. That's like
it's
unheard.
Never happened.
Yeah, that's unheard. Well, factually, it's never happened. And even those games aren't really that close. You'll be excited if it's an 8-point game at the end.
If it's single digits with a 1-16 seed, that everybody's looking at that game.
Yeah, and this year I think it might be even a chance that one of the number one seeds gets upset. That's how good and how great the parity in college basketball is this year. It seems like you can go to every conference and say, like, oh, that's 3 or 4 teams that might be able to go deep this year. It's really crazy to think about, which has made this college basketball season so interesting. But one of the good teams, or one of the teams who's separated themselves just an inchling, just a little.
Who's number one right
now. Yeah, number one ranked Syracuse. They've been able to establish themselves as the premier team, but not by a lot, if that makes sense.
Just enough to earn that number one ranking with the body of work that they've done so far. They've had good wins. And talking about Cuse, over the past decade that Boeheim has been there, he's implemented this nasty 2-3 zone. They never play anything but the 2-3 zone.
And it's every year.
Every year, but nobody can seem to figure it out.
It's because their zone is so athletic. They are so long. Their arms just get in every passing lane. They make every shot and every possession so tough. And that's why he hasn't had to change anything over his whole tenure at Syracuse, which makes him the second most winningest coach in college basketball. It's crazy to think, like you said, they do not get out of that zone. They're going to run that every time down the court. And they're gonna beat you most of the times, which is why they're undefeated to this point in the season.
One team that nearly solved that zone was the Dukies. Temple's a fan of Duke. Duke and Syracuse faced off in what Coach Boeheim called one of the best games ever in the Carrier Dome.
Yeah, he's seen a lot of games.
He has seen a lot of games. For those of you who don't know Coach Boeheim, he's an elderly man.
That was just funny the way he said it.
He really is. He's, I believe,
well, yeah, when you're
68, almost 70 years old, but he's a genius, basketball genius.
Yeah, when you're the number two winningest coach in college basketball, you've got to be getting up there in age. And like you said, he is an elderly man. But
no disrespect to that at all.
He's a basketball savant.
Yes, and great word.
Yeah, I like that word. I love that word, too. Okay, get back to the Duke-Syracuse game. This one hurt my heart a little bit.
But another one of these coaches that is a basketball savant like you claimed Coach Boeheim was, or is, I should say, still in the game, is Coach K, Coach Krzyzewski for Duke. So we had two Hall of Fame coaches clashing in a record-setting crowd in the Carrier Dome, where Cuse also plays their football game. So it's a huge, huge dome.
It's intimidating.
Very intimidating. And the Dukies nearly upset them. This game went into overtime. They hit 15 threes.
And that's what? That was the...
That's how you beat a zone right there.
That was the kryptonite to the Boeheim zone, was those three-pointers. Hood and Suleiman. I always get his name Suleiman. They always say it different on each broadcast. But they each hit huge threes, and they were able to get Jabari Parker going inside until he actually fouled out. It was a great all-around game, both from a fan standpoint and from the players. You could see the determination and the real just will to want to win that game.
And from every athlete, everything was spilled. All the energy, all the heart was spilled on that floor. Coach K said in the post-interview, "I can't ask for any more effort from my players. They'd given it all." You love that as a coach. Talk about Jabari Parker here for a minute or two. There are some plays that he made that warranted that he's a number two or number one pick in this upcoming draft if he decides to leave.
Yeah, and he's just a freshman, and the kid is just insanely talented. He plays a 3-4-5. He could play almost any position on the court. And what he's so good at is he establishes himself down low with the post move, but then he can also take a bigger defender outside on the wing and get past him with that first quick move. He's just a brilliant all-around player.
And he can shoot the three.
Yeah, and only a freshman. Really, just he does everything so well for Duke and those Cameron crazies for the Blue Devils. It's just, he's an amazing player. And if he does decide to go to the draft, he will be a number one or two pick.
There were some plays that were absolutely phenomenal. He tried to take over that game. But as in a lot of games in college basketball, you only get five fouls until you're disqualified. You foul out. Not like the NBA, which is six. And some of the calls that went against Duke were very, very harsh.
Yeah.
Parker fouled out of this game with 142. He picked up his fourth foul with around 8 minutes to go in the second half. In overtime, Duke's big man, both their big men, power forward and center, Jefferson and Parker, gone. They foul out.
And there,
Duke's going with five guards. Hood is technically a small forward slash guard.
And he was playing the five.
Trying to beat the Syracuse D, and they almost did it before Cuse had a chance to close it out in regulation. Suleiman comes down.
And it's a miraculous three.
A miraculous three is what it was.
Yeah, and the defense was just like going to let him shoot that wild one from the left, like 35, 40 feet from the basket, just crazy shot, and he knocked it down to
overtime.
Yeah, and I thought they had all the momentum. I was like, oh, Duke's got this now. They're going into overtime, even without Parker. I was like, Duke just hit a miraculous three, we're calling it. This game should be theirs, but credit Boeheim and the Orange. They played a great game in the overtime, and they were able to really just be one play better than the Duke that game.
And they just took advantage down low. They kept feeding Grant, Jabari Grant. He's a 6'8 forward. He's getting guarded by a 6'4 guard in Dawkins. Just over and over, they kept pounding him. But Dukies were in it. They're down by one. They have the basketball, a chance to win.
This is what
I wanted to know. You have all the calls going against Duke, and Rodney Hood, he has a ball out on the perimeter, left wing. He takes two dribbles and absolutely rears back for a monster jam. Monster tomahawk. Tries to throw it down. Syracuse defender contests it.
Clearly hits him on the arm.
Gets him on the arm, and the ball just bangs off the back of the rim as he tries to flush it.
Yeah, that would have been a monster slam.
He went up. It reminded me of
yourself,
Draymond Green trying to get up in a Warrior. He Draymond just goes for Green. The ambitious dunk sometimes. And
or that one time when Bazemore went to slam it.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's another good example. But he got up in the air, and he got fouled. No call. Coach K wondering where's the foul, and if he gets fouled and he goes to the line and hit two, Duke's up by one point.
With under 10 seconds left.
That's what the game-changing play to me was in OT, despite not having big man. Unbelievable game. Game of the year for me, but that wasn't the only big news that happened in college basketball.
Well, just one. I think it was one day later. The Arizona Wildcats, who were considered with Syracuse to be one of those two premier teams. They're both undefeated. They played tough competition, but Arizona goes into Cal. Cal just lost to Arizona State, who's not that good. So you're thinking, oh, Arizona should have this game. Arizona blows the game. Brandon Ashley, one of their star players, gets hurt. Really bad injury to his foot. They have to play without him for most of the game. And they end up losing on a last-second shot by Cobb.
And then that was clutch.
Pandemonium. Everyone runs on the court. There's still time left in the game. They had to clear the court so it doesn't get a technical call.
In high school, a crowd did that in a game, and our team got teed up.
I've seen it done plenty of times, too, when a crowd will go storm the court too early. That tee is supposed to be called.
So do the refs just kind of realize, all right, fans not really knowing what's going on in the game. They thought the buzzer went off. They're not going to tee up Cal.
Yeah, I guess.
To give that game away, because it's really giving the game away. Cal had earned it.
Yeah, they did. And since it was such a close call, because I think they put 0.4 on the clock after that, I mean, that might have been a reason, too, because it was such a really just small amount between the buzzer actually going off and the clock being changed back to 0.4 seconds left. And it was really crazy. They cleared the court really quickly. All the players were yelling, get off the court, get off the court. And then just one play later, a heave, a desperation play didn't work out for the Wildcats, and then everyone stormed the court and they were able
one
to celebrate
time.
Yeah, exactly, one more time. They got two for the price of one there. It was just a really good weekend for college basketball with Arizona falling, and that just shows to the parity. Cal, yeah, they only lost one game at home, which was against that Arizona State just 2 days before this one, but it just shows the parity. Cal can come down and beat the then number one ranked Wildcats in a huge game with a huge shot by Cobb, their point guard.
And now with no Ashley, that's going to put a dent in their title hopes, obviously. He was a big part, being a big man down low for them. He's going to be done for the season. And since it's right around the corner, Temple and I were just kind of brainstorming about, okay, which teams can run the table? Which teams could win it? And you know there's always those teams that put together the furious rally, that catch everyone off guard, that has everybody ripping up their brackets and throwing them in the trash.
And that happens every
year. The sleepers.
The number 12 seed will run the table, get to the Sweet 16, and everyone's like, that just messed up my bracket. You know, then you got to try to predict those things, and that's what Temple and Swan did here on the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu. We try to focus on some of the sleeper teams that if you do fill out those brackets and you want to maybe have success this year, you might not be that great. Take some advice from who I like to claim that I'm decent, or Swanee. I've never seen you pick a bracket, but you just look like the kind of guy who could pick a good bracket. I don't know, just judging. Do you pick a good bracket usually?
There's been good times.
There's been good times.
There's been other times where I get blown up by Florida Gulf Coast and VCU.
Dunk City.
But it's hard. Dunk City. So there's times where you just can't predict that. That's just heart. You can't judge a team's heart if you haven't seen them play. And these teams that come out of nowhere, they're not usually televised, and you see how hard they're playing and how much fun they're having.
Yeah.
And it's just a similar, they call it the Cinderella story.
And it's all in college basketball. Like what we see here with Dominican, even them, we see this a lot. Underdogs can beat you if they have the right matchups. It's all about matchups in college basketball.
Good call, it is.
Say a guard is, I mean, a team is guard oriented and they start knocking down threes. There's nothing that a team like Ohio State or a team like just a slower paced team can do to beat that, because they're going to be down 15 at half. They're not built to come back from a deficit like that. They're a possession team. They like to bring it up slowly. You know, it's just stuff like that that happens all the time in the tournament.
Especially the teams that catch fire from three.
Yeah, and that happens almost every game with an underdog team. They will
you can't do anything. You just got to be better than that team for one game, one day.
Yeah, and they'll be like, this team shot 16% from beyond the arc on the season. They'll knock down 9 threes that game. And they'll shoot it from about, they'll shoot about 70% from beyond the arc that game. And it's just crazy the way it happens like that. So we wanted to pick some teams that might be sleepers to go, not necessarily win the tournament, but definitely go deep or win 1 to 2 games in this tourney. Who's your first sleeper, you think, Swanee?
I'm going to go Virginia Commonwealth. I really like them. They've already been to the Final Four. But they'll be another sleeper.
And they're not
again.
Being talked about this year that much. They had I know their first game was nationally broadcast, and then they had when they do that 24-hour, ESPN does that 24 hours of college basketball, they were broadcasting that one too. But we haven't really heard much of VCU after that.
And they run a style that's called a havoc defense. They were on ESPN on a morning game last Saturday. First off, their fans are unbelievable. But this team runs the most tenacious full court press after a made basket. They rotate bodies in. They're a good 9 to 10 players deep. And this team is super athletic. Nearly all 5 players that are in can jam. And if they can get up and jam, you know they're going to be getting up and down the floor, getting their hands in passing lanes, getting steals, and they thrive off that. Their coach thrives off that. He loves the full court press, and that just gives teams trouble in the tournament. So I got VCU doing well, and then my second sleeper is Massachusetts. They're 18-4 as well. They're also from the Atlantic 10. Don't count out the Minutemen. I also like what I've seen from them. I know you got a couple sleepers in mind too.
Yeah, the first team that I think could make a real deep run is the Stanford Cardinal, just from Palo Alto right near us. They're 15-7 on the season, which doesn't really blow you away. They play in the Pac-12, which is mediocre. They have Arizona, Colorado, Oregon, UCLA, teams that aren't really great right now but are decent teams. But I think the thing about Stanford is they have a front court that is really intimidating, and they may not have the depth. They're about 6 players deep, so that could hurt them in the tournament. But if these guys can get the ball inside to their huge front court, I mean their back court and front court, the starting 5 is good. Let's just put it at that. I think Stanford can definitely make a run in this tournament. And my second sleeper team is
my favorite right here.
Yeah, the Billikens from St. Louis. They're 21-2 on the season, not yet ranked.
Nobody's talking about
it. Yeah, and no one's talking about it. They've won 15 straight games. Their only losses were two ranked teams at the time. They lost by 5 to Ohio State when Ohio State was undefeated and actually playing well. And they lost to 4 to another ranked team that I can't really remember right now. But another good team. Oh, it was Wichita State. That's who it was. There we go. I just got a brain blast. Wichita State, who is undefeated right now and the number 4 ranked team. And they lost both of those games really closely, down to the wire, final possession kind of games.
They can play with anyone.
Yeah, so I see the Billikens being a real team that if you're filling out your bracket, you got to watch out for them. Don't just consider them an easy out. This team might be able to make a run.
And when you're filling out your bracket, the Wichita State Shockers, you mentioned, they're undefeated. They're 23-0. They're number 4 in the country right now. Right behind them is San Diego State, who's number 5. There's a term that analysts like to use. They call these schools mid-majors. They come from mid-major conferences. So you have a team from a mid-major, 2 teams, that are number 4 and number 5. And this has been talked about quite a bit over the last 2 weeks, as there's only 5 or 6 games left until the conference tournaments, and then immediately the NCAA tournament follows. Wichita State is undefeated. They're 23-0. Is it? They don't look like they're going to lose a game in the regular season.
I don't think they're going to lose one in the regular season.
That's a big, big feat to accomplish. But is that good for a basketball team going into the NCAA tournament if you're undefeated? You have never lost. You haven't been dealt with that adversity at all. And then you play in the one for all the marbles.
Yeah, I think you need to lose before you go into a huge tournament like this where it's...
Agree with you completely.
Yeah, where it's like you have to win that game. Each day is different. You have to win or you're out for the rest of the season. And the Shockers, yeah, they're number four ranked, 23-0, and of course they want to win all their games. But due to their conference, and they're just clearly overmatched. I mean, they're overmatching the other teams with just star potential and players being just way bigger than that, the other teams. They're not going to lose for the rest of the season. So, like you said, I think they really should. They're not challenged enough. So maybe coach next year challenges them and says a game against Kansas on the road to begin the season. Something like that to get them to know how a loss feels. Because it's different. When you lose a game, say you're a nationally ranked team like the Shockers are from Wichita State, if you lose a game, the way you practice the next day and the way you play in your next couple of games is so much better, so much harder than what you would have played if you haven't really encountered a loss.
I completely agree. All the way, and you played baseball, basketball in high school. I don't know if your team, any of your teams ever went undefeated, but just hypothetically imagine you run the table, you're undefeated. How good are you feeling as an athlete? You really don't know and believe that you can lose. And then right when a team hits you in the mouth and you're down 10 with 5 minutes left and you got to go and you got to find a way to win and your season's on the line. You don't know how to deal with that.
Yeah, they might.
Because you have never lost a game.
Yeah, I think the biggest deficit they've had late in a game is about 5 points, which they just faced against Indiana State Sycamores. I mean, really, they haven't overcome a huge deficit yet, which is what every great team does.
I agree.
I mean, that's a good point that you bring up. It's hard to think that Wichita State will be going into the tournament knowing what a real underdog should... I mean, what a real... what a real underdog should do in a tournament like this, because they're going to be favored in most of these games now, even though they haven't really played a great nationally ranked team.
So you could see Wichita State as a number one seed, but for you listeners out there picking your bracket, be careful because the numbers do lie sometimes. Last college basketball segment we're getting into is going to reference the future potential number one NBA draft pick. Everyone's hyped up about this man. His name's Joel Embiid. He's a 7-footer from Kansas. And what makes him so great is he's quick and he's got good awareness. He's only played organized basketball, I couldn't believe this, for 3 years. And he's saying, I might want to come back and return to Kansas for another year. I don't know if I'm ready for the NBA yet. If you hear your name as a potential number one pick, 99% of those athletes are gone.
Yeah, and I think it's a smart move for him to just consider staying in Kansas. He's, like you said, he's only played basketball, organized basketball, for 3 years of his life. And right now he's being considered the number one pick, like the unanimous number one pick in all of NBA. So I think
Scouts love this guy.
Yeah, I mean, everyone loves a 7-plus footer who can move like he does. He shoots the ball very well. Not from outside range, but he's a very good mid-range jumper. Gets a lot of rebounds. He's a shot blocker on the defensive side. So everyone loves his intangibles. What I think is important for Embiid is to really sit down and focus with... I mean, talk to Coach Bill Self and think, should I even make this jump yet? I've only played basketball for 3 years. I don't know if I'm ready to make the next jump to the elite level where the NBA players play. Because you see a lot of prospects who will be busts in the NBA because they go too quickly. It happens all the time.
Off the top of my head, last year, Anthony Bennett.
Yeah, the number
selected
one pick.
Number one from
UNLV.
UNLV,
yeah.
And he goes to the Cleveland Cavaliers. He has been nothing for them. Not even a quality bench player. That's the number one pick right there.
Yeah.
Busts happen all the time. So as an organization, you really want to know, is this guy going to be dialed in if he's coming outside into the draft after school? I think Embiid will be a good player. He's got that kind of Anthony Davis-type look to him. Anthony Davis, obviously,
a lot more
quicker. Gazelle-like, 7-foot freak. And he's doing wonders for New Orleans in the NBA. But it'll be interesting to see if he decides to come out or not. We'll see how Kansas does. They might take an early loss in the tournament, and that sparks players to come back and try to get another shot at a title. But we'll see. He's a good player, and it's kind of funny how everyone was on the Andrew Wiggins bandwagon, who also plays at Kansas, who everybody thought was a one-and-done guy. He's going to be the number one pick, hands down.
He's not even the best freshman.
His teammates getting
He's not even the best freshman
anymore. Recognition. I agree.
It's crazy.
I agree with you, man. Dub's coming up next. You're listening to the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu.
A sunset falling. Lay a blanket by the creek where the moon peeks over that sycamore tree. And it won't be anyone watching. No one watching. Now there ain't nothing wrong, baby, you and I. Getting down to some up all night. Now don't forget your flip-flops. We can stop by the quick stop. Get some jerky and a 12-pack. No telling when we'll be back. I got a cooler in a truck bed. Couple towels when we get wet. Cause you know we're gonna jump in and take a little midnight swim. So baby, let's go take a dirt road. Kick it back, find a good song on the radio. Till we get lost in a sunset falling. Lay a blanket by the creek where the moon peeks over that sycamore tree. And it won't be anyone watching. No one watching. Now there ain't nothing wrong, baby, you and I. Getting down to some up all night.
Hello, listeners. You are tuned in to the Temple of Swan here at radio.dominican.edu. Halfway through our show, which happens every Thursday from 5 to 7 here at radio.dominican.edu. We do have a Facebook page. If you listeners have not liked it yet, make sure you do that. It is the Temple of Swan. We have a nice new logo, black and yellow, baseball diamond. Pretty awesome. So make sure you check that Facebook page out. Again, that is the Temple of Swan on Facebook.com. Like Alex said, we are going to get into some Warrior talk, and then after that, we'll be doing sports news, some Olympics news, because that just got underway, and then our top five, and our picks. I almost forgot about our picks. So we got a full slate here for the rest of the hour, so make sure you stay tuned here. Alex said we're going to start with some Warriors, so that's what we're going to do. The Warriors right now, 29-20, but they're frustrating 29-20. Usually, you see a 29-20 record for the Warriors, and you get happy, but this year, expectations have grown. They are believed to be one of the top teams in the West Conference, maybe even in the entire National Basketball Association. So a 29-20 record doesn't do the job, and it doesn't do what we want to see as fans.
And there's some nights where the Warriors play like that. They play like they can take on the Thunder, the Spurs in a seven-game series, the Clippers. They just pounded the Clippers last Thursday on national television, just beat them to death. And then they go down by double digits the other night to the Bobcats.
At home, that is.
What's up with the inconsistency right now?
They were once, like last year, we'll even just go back to last year, they were believed to be one of the best home court teams. They played the best at Oracle Arena. They were feared by many opponents. No one wanted to come into Oracle and play this year. But right now, the Warriors seem to have lost that home court advantage. They're two of their last seven at home. So they went 2-5 in their last seven games at home. Now that's
unheard of.
Yeah, that's crazy. And it's teams that they're losing to teams that they should definitely beat: the Timberwolves, the Wizards, the Bobcats by double digits, where they shot a very horrible 32%. I was watching that game and I wanted to pull my eyes out.
That's horrid.
Yeah,
you're talking about that. It's worse the worst in the last 9 years for the Dubs.
And the Dubs have had some bad teams in the last 9 years, and none of them shot as terribly as the Warriors did just this week against the Bobcats. Michael Jordan owns the Bobcats, but he does not play for the Bobcats. The Bobcats are horrible. You had Kemba Walker coming back for his first game. Oh, I just cannot understand how the Warriors put together 75 points against the Bobcats.
And usually when the struggles happen, you look to your best player, Steph Curry. Well, he's getting it done. It's the other teammates that are not helping him out, especially Klay Thompson, who can't hit the right side of a barn right now.
He can't.
He is absolutely in the cold streak. He's in a funk. He's got to get out of it somehow. He's shooting 27% from the field the last five games. That is awful for how good of a shooter he is.
And you know what the worst thing about that is? Yes, he's shooting 27% from the field over his last five, but he's averaging 17 shots a game in the last five games. So
he keeps firing away.
Not only is he not hitting the right side of a barn, but he keeps attempting to hit the right side of the barn, and he can't. 17 shot attempts a game.
How do you get out of the slump? I ask you.
Usually
I know you could shoot it up in high school. How do you get out of a slump if you can't find the net?
Usually, like I said, I was a decent shooter, but I never really focused on shooting. I like to pass the ball. I was more of a Jason Kidd
distributor.
Player. Yeah, I wanted to get other people involved in the spotlight. Because, you know, like Chris Paul, I'm just there to assist. Like, commercially,
you're quick and fast. Exactly. I can see that setting other people up.
So why focus on shooting? But I know from just listening to broadcasts and listening to players talk, shooters like to shoot to get themselves out of cold streaks like this. But Klay Thompson's obviously showing that he can't just shoot to get himself out of this. I think he's got to really just change and adjust his game, because right now he is not hitting from the outside. He's not even making layups, actually. So what do you do?
Should he start facilitating more? Get to the free throw line? What can he get going? Because if you can't shoot, and that's what your specialty is, that kind of changes the dynamic of the offense for the Warriors.
Yeah, Klay Thompson is a pure shooter. He doesn't go to the rack too often. He doesn't rebound, really. He plays decent defense. But his main calling card is his shooting, and right now he is not getting that done. Like you said, I think he might have to be a facilitator. Join Curry and start looking to get other people involved. And then another person struggling, just to get off on a little tangent here, Andre Iguodala, ever since his injury, has just been horrid as well. He's averaging, I think, 8 points a game ever since his injury. And yeah, he's not a scoring presence, but he just looks slow and just does not look like he's even a factor.
The normal Iggy.
Yeah, it doesn't even look like he's a factor on the offensive side. In the beginning of the season, you saw him facilitating, getting to the rack, and then dishing off to Bogut or Curry going inside out. Now you don't even see him get to the paint.
Rewind the clock a little bit here. Iggy on the Sixers was the primary scorer, rebounder, and facilitator.
And defender.
And obviously. And how can I forget that? The main defender.
He was all around. Superstar.
And so, exactly. He was in the superstar category. Where did that Iguodala go? I know his role has changed being on the Warriors now, but where does that spark of offense or distribution come from?
Yeah.
Where is that? Like, he's got it in him. He showed it playing at Philly. He would go toe-to-toe with Braun.
I know. I was wondering the same thing just a couple days ago. Like, the guy has proven that he could score in this league. And
he's
all
an
of
all-star.
And all of a sudden he goes to the Nuggets and just doesn't shoot the ball anymore, doesn't shoot well. I mean, he wasn't really a factor on the offensive side, and we knew that coming to the Warriors, but he was still averaging, I think, 12 to 13 points a game. Now he comes to the Warriors, and you'll be lucky if you get him to 5 points in a game. It's really crazy to think.
You look up, Iggy's 2 for 7.
Yeah.
That's
for the game, yeah. It's crazy, and he'll have maybe one assist, two rebounds.
That's just not Iguodala's stat line at all.
It's not, and maybe that's what the Warriors are looking forward to the most, is the All-Star break coming up soon to get these hurt players rested, because you have David Lee also, who's been hurt and banged up, and he is usually Mr. Consistent. I think it was 136 games with double digits. That streak was snapped in the horrible shooting against the Bobcats. He had 8 points. He has not looked the same ever since that shoulder injury against the Pacers.
So the Dubs, I see them getting it going after the All-Star break, but we've been kind of saying that now for a good month. We see the bright spots, and then we see the inconsistent dark spots for the Warriors. Is there going to be a time after the All-Star break where they just reel off 9 out of 12, 15 out of 18 games where they just really start hammering, get their chemistry down, and take it to the Western Conference.
That's what everyone's hoping for if you're a Warrior fan. And that we thought we saw that streak come when they won 10 games in a row. Then the hashtag full squad movement came about. And then after that, they really have not just been at all that great. You're seeing the inconsistent play. Like, they'll beat the Trailblazers, another very good team in the Western Conference. Then they'll drop one of the Timberwolves. They give up 121 points. I mean, it's just crazy the way they're losing right now, and which is why they're 4-6 in their last 10, moving them down to the sixth seed and only 2.5 games up on the streaking Grizzlies right now.
And that's what worries me a little bit, because the Grizzlies are streaking and they're in the ninth seed. They're not even in the playoff picture. If it happened today, they'd be out. Top eight go, and if they're a half game in front of the Mavs, who are in the eighth spot, that just shows how competitive the Western Conference is from top to bottom.
Yeah, you're not playing in the East.
In the sixth spot, and you could find yourself a week later out of the playoff picture.
Yeah.
You're down in the ninth spot. So the games that you talked about that they needed to win and should win against the Bobcats, the T-Wolves, the Wizards, you got to win those games, because when you look back at the end of the schedule and you see an L next to that and you're sitting a half game or a game out of the playoffs, then you look there.
Yeah, that's
and you
the
realize,
first place
wow,
to
you kick yourself
exactly
for losing those games.
We just
hopefully
shot,
that doesn't happen to the Dubs.
Yeah, we just shot 32% against the Bobcats. How did we lose that game? You know, that's just huge mistakes from the Warriors, which is why that brings up the talk of the playoffs. They're not playing in the Eastern Conference where they'd be the number three seed. They're in the tightly contested Western Conference. You said it. You could lose two games in a week and then be out of the playoffs come the next week's standings. It's just crazy the way this West Conference is shaping up with the Mavericks, the Grizzlies, the Suns, Trailblazers, just all these
they're
teams
all in it.
Exactly.
I got a question for you here. Is it kind of an embarrassment to the league in general that how bad the East is compared to the Western Conference? To put it in perspective, you have multiple teams below 500 in the playoffs.
Yeah, multiple, not just one.
This is a good from the sixth seed, possibly the fifth seed in below, is 500 or lower for their overall team record. That would never fly in the West.
Yeah.
You better be at least, I'm saying this year, at least 10 games above 500 if you want to be getting in.
Definitely, and I agree that I think that is an embarrassment
to the league.
It's like
the three seed in the
East. Yeah, I think that is an embarrassment to the league. We talked about parity in college basketball. There is no such thing in the NBA right now. Well, the Western Conference there
is. That bothers me a little
bit. Exactly. You go to the Eastern Conference, and these teams are just, they're beating each other up, but they're not good teams.
Like, they get waxed in the
West.
Yeah,
like you said, the eighth seed in the West could be the three seed in the East. It's crazy. It's crazy to think about that. And that's right now, that's going to hurt the Warriors, because they're going to have to be on top of their game throughout the whole season. They don't have the luxury of playing in the Eastern Conference.
Exactly. Can't agree with you more. They got the Bulls tonight. Hopefully they can take them out. Saturday they go at Phoenix. Monday they got Philadelphia 76ers. Nationally televised on Wednesday, LeBron and company come to town.
Looking for the rematch.
Oh my goodness, that's going to be an amazing game. Hopefully they can get back on track tonight. Moving on from the Dubs into some great, great sports news around America right now. And this was just released the other day. Sad, sad news. We're going to start it off. Curt Schilling. What do you got about Curt Schilling?
Yeah, Curt Schilling, the notorious pitcher for the Red Sox. Great career. He has been diagnosed with cancer, and that was announced just yesterday. He's only 47 years old. Really sad news coming out of that. There's no news on what type of cancer it is or what the prognosis is, but just announced yesterday that he has now been diagnosed with cancer.
And he is always on the segment Baseball Tonight. He was looking great. He seemed great, and as in health-wise. But now, it just shows you that with anybody in life, no matter famous, no matter an athlete, no matter a normal civilian, this dreaded disease can just hit you like a train and just all of a sudden pop up in a diagnosis. And that changed your life.
Yeah, and
cancer really, really scares me.
And Curt Schilling looked healthy, like you said. He was always on TV. Really just no means about it. You wouldn't expect this. But like you said, it could hit you like a train and come out of really just left field, if you want to use a baseball reference. And it's really horrible to see that Curt Schilling was diagnosed with cancer. Hopefully they caught it early, and it's not to the stage where it's untreatable. But we'll find out more news on that as the year, I mean, as the month goes on here. I'm sure that it'll be leaked so we can get some more news on that. Going over to football, as many of you listeners may have known, this is the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu, but you guys might have watched the Super Bowl. It was the most watched Super Bowl and the most watched television event in all of American TV television. I don't know how to correctly state that, but that's what I'm going to say. The Seattle Seahawks won a very boring game. They dominated physically, mentally, emotionally, any level of football. They dominated it. Commercials were horrible, just on a side point.
Just the overall Super Bowl, to me, was just a dud.
It was.
All the hype, for all the hype, this magnitude of a game was an absolute dud.
And I picked the Broncos, so that's even more embarrassing.
Oh, there's a lot of people that picked the Broncos, and guess what's more embarrassing? There's a lot of people that put good money on the Broncos.
Yeah, I didn't do that. I wasn't that
confident.
Nobody
saw this coming.
Yeah.
Nobody saw this blowout coming.
Except for the 12th man, and they celebrated in style. An estimated 700,000 people were there for the Super Bowl celebration in Seattle, which is bigger than the population of
Seattle.
How about that? That's crazy.
I tip my cap to Seattle. I really do. And I'll give you a little reference of what was going on. My buddy goes to the University of Washington, and he stepped outside once Seattle won the Super Bowl. He's not a Seahawk fan. He's a Packer fan. And so he just wanted to kind of observe what the atmosphere would be like. Well, guess what? We had civilians burning couches out on the street. Riots. This city went off. And when I saw there was 700K to celebrate in Seattle, it didn't surprise me one bit, because this city is so on so much of a euphoric high right now that this feels like the turn of the century to them.
Yeah, their last championship win was the Seattle Supersonics.
All the hate that they have expressed, how they got that team torn away from them, and to see all the excess that Oklahoma City is having right now. But that's an outstanding celebration. 700,000. Bigger than this whole population. Multiple families getting out there. And unbelievable.
The public school system said that more than 25% of the district's 51,000 students were absent in the morning for that celebration. And by comparison, about 5% of those students were absent the day before. So just crazy. A 20% increase.
If we were Seahawks fan, that'd be us.
Yeah.
Come on, Mom. Let me call in. Do I have to go to school today?
Just like the Giants parade. I'm not a Giants fan, but I definitely went to that parade.
Unbelievable.
It's like you won't see that maybe once in a lifetime. So when you get that chance, you got to go. So I definitely would have called in sick for school that day. Like, hey, son, we're going to go to watch the parade. There's no harm in that.
Not at all. Not at all. Unbelievable. Next story. This was kind of a unique situation. Hasn't happened in basketball. It went down last night with the Lakers on the road at the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Lakers came into the game with 8 active players. They're really, really beat up. And so right in the beginning, one of their players, Nick Young, twisted his left knee in the first half. They're down to 7. Chris came in later on in the game, fouls out early in the fourth quarter. They're down to 6 active players. Jordan Farmar goes inside for a layup, tweaks his leg, tries to give it a go in about a couple more minutes when he checks back in. He can't go. They're down to 5. 5 available players. Robert Sacre's got 4-5 fouls, and he gets whistled for his 6th. And
6 is a foul out.
You're done. Technically, they've only got 4 players. And in the NBA, the rule is you must have 5 players on the floor at all times. So this was the first I've ever seen this rule being expressed.
And same with Coach D'Antoni, same with Paul Gasol, everyone, same story as that.
And I'd be shocked if I was a player too. There's 3:32 left in the ballgame. Sacre commits his 6th foul. He doesn't really know what to do. Refs explain to him, it's a technical foul because you are fouled out. You don't have enough players to be playing. So there's a technical foul called. And for every foul that Sacre commits for the rest of the 3 minutes and 32 seconds, it's a technical foul as well. So each foul.
Yeah, you get your personal foul added to the technical
plus
foul.
Plus the tech, beautifully said. And despite all of that, the Lakers win and they snap the 7-game losing streak.
And
how about that?
In lieu of that now, the Cavaliers fired their GM because I think they've had enough of
things in Cleveland aren't good.
These horrible stories for the Cavaliers. They lost to a team that had technically four active players now, but got to finish with five because of the NBA rule. That was just a crazy story that we saw just last night. Really crazy. Moving on from that, in college football, signing day was yesterday as well, and Alabama notched the number one recruiting class once again. They build a dynasty over there. Nick Saban and his boys once again get the number one recruiting class.
If you're a big-time recruit and Nick Saban comes knocking on your door, how are you going to turn that down?
You can't turn down Nick Saban in Alabama.
That's what I think. That's why each year, it's almost like Alabama just restocks.
Yeah.
They know, okay, our groceries are now empty. We got to go to the store and get more. Here's a plethora of five-star recruits. Okay, we're good now. We've just restocked for this year.
They get the best groceries.
Good luck to our professional athletes, but here comes the cream of the crop, creme de la creme athletes to their school each and every year.
There's no rebuilding stage for the Crimson Tide out of Alabama.
I think that's why
restock.
Saban doesn't leave.
Yeah, that's why he does. Exactly. And he had little to no success in the NFL, and he doesn't want to leave this college and go to another college because it's going to take him some time to build up the program like he has at Alabama. He hasn't made there. This is going to be the number one recruiting class annually. They could do this every year. The number one. There's no surprise that Alabama knocked down the number one recruiting class again.
Not at all. Going on, next story, Jameis Winston. If you know who he is, he won the national title. He was a quarterback for Florida State as they beat Auburn. Well, guess what? He doesn't only play football. He plays baseball as well, and he's pretty dang good. Preseason third team All-American. He's a pitcher, as you can imagine, since he's a quarterback. He's got a nasty fastball, and he can hit. So only a beast in football, and you win the title, you go and get to now play at a great Florida State school that's great at baseball as well.
Yeah, Buster Posey, a product of the Seminoles baseball program. Florida State is no slouch in baseball. Like you said, they're a very good program. They're always in the College World Series. So for him to even play on that team is saying a lot. He did win the Heisman, and now he's been named to the preseason third team All-American in the utility category, which means he can hit and pitch. It's just really crazy to think about. Jameis Winston last year as a freshman batted .235 with a pair of homers and steals, and on the hill he threw 27 innings and had a 3 ERA with 21 strikeouts. Dude can do it all.
He can, and there's a YouTube clip of him out in right field. Base hit to right field, runners trying to round second, go to third, and Winston threw a seed and just gunned this runner down. And he couldn't really believe it. I was like, wow.
And
not only arm strength throwing the football, but the baseball too.
And Florida State plans to put famous Jameis this year as a closer. That's what I've been reading. So you know the guy can throw because of his skills on the football field, and he's going to show it this year on the baseball diamond as well. Moving on to our next story of another football player who's been really just highly scouted as a baseball player as well. It's Russell Wilson.
He got drafted.
Yeah, Russell Wilson just won the Super Bowl, and there's been reports that he might be attending Rangers spring training. He was drafted by the Rangers in a Rule 5 draft just this last year. He said he's going to attend possibly, but not play. Just take some batting practice, maybe field some grounders, but not play in an actual game.
That's smart to go out to the Rangers organization. He's a former minor league second baseman in the Rockies system.
Yeah, and he played two seasons.
And so you know he can ball a little bit. He's got so much success. He just won the dang Super Bowl, for crying out loud. You know he's not going to take a go and try to go Michael Jordan, leave one sport, go play baseball. But that's cool that he's going out to Texas, take some BP, get a little spring training work in shape.
Yeah, you know he's busy too with all the post-Super Bowl accolades and parties and extravaganzas he has planned, so that's a nice act for him just to go out to the Texas Rangers spring training facility.
And moving on, as we like to tip our cap to Russell Wilson, he's actually going to be a great face for the NFL.
Yeah, he's an all-around good
Commissioner
person,
Goodell.
Too.
I agree. Great character. Speaking of the NFL, those Thursday night games, if you don't have NFL Network now, you are good for the first eight, because CBS is going to air those first eight NFL Thursday night games. I was a victim to this. I didn't have NFL Network. I couldn't catch these Thursday night games right after our show last semester, which I really wanted to, so I'm stoked for this. CBS will air those eight games, and The deal will only apply to the 2014 season, though the NFL could opt to extend it through 2015. NFL Network will then take over and carry the next eight. But it's cool that CBS is jumping in, and that's going to be the network for the first eight NFL games
and
on Thursdays.
Yeah, the NFL and Roger Goodell really want to make sure everyone has the ability to watch their sport and to watch football. So with them having it exclusively on NFL Network, not a lot of people could watch it, like yourself or like other people who may not have the NFL Network. So now Goodell is making the slow transition to getting it accessible to everyone, putting it both on CBS and NFL Network. So there's no excuse to not watch Thursday Night Football anymore. That's what Roger Goodell is trying to do. And moving
over, more revenue, more ratings.
Exactly. And they're just trying to build the most popular sport here in America even to be even a bigger beast. This is the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu. We're doing some national news here, national sports news. One more story of another person trying to go to baseball that had a had former success in another sport is Tracy McGrady. He's going to try his hand as a baseball pitcher, and the retired seven-time NBA All-Star is aiming to become a baseball player now, a pitcher. Matter of fact, he's going to be trying out and pitching for the Sugar Land Skeeters, which is the same team that Roger Clemens made his comeback tour for. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Remember the hype that Clemens was coming back?
Yeah.
They were showing his clips on SportsCenter down in the minor leagues, seeing how he's going to do.
They're going to do the same for Tracy McGrady.
I don't think it's one thing for Clemens to come back, who's been a bona fide major league pitcher, but McGrady's shooting jump shots. Where do you go and start throwing baseballs around?
I didn't even know. He said this is.
He's a tall dude.
And he said this has always been his dream. And that's really crazy to think.
It's good he's chasing his dream.
Yeah, and he said he's doing this for the love of the game, not for the money. Of course, if you're going to the Sugar Land Skeeters, you're not doing it for the money. But it's just going to be interesting to see.
What do you think his success is going to be like?
He says he has a nasty curveball. That's what I've read.
And so did Barry Zito, but.
Yeah, we saw what happened to him. I think McGrady. Dude, baseball is harder than it looks.
I don't think it's so hard.
Exactly. I don't think he'll do too great, to be honest. If you want my honest opinion, what's your take on that?
I agree with you. I think that he's going to get rocked. There's going to be eventually where hitters will sit on that curveball and it's going to get yacked.
And the Sugar Land Skeeters are going to be like, we do not want your services
anymore.
Sorry,
Tracy.
It'd be good for ticket sales,
though. It will. The first couple of games, hey, McGrady's pitching. Let's go check it out.
McGrady
gave up eight in the first inning. Let's leave.
Yeah. I don't want to stay here for the Sugar Land Skeeters game anymore. That's going to be interesting to see. I definitely want to catch some highlights on there. On ESPN, that is, not there. I don't know why I said that.
Next story, very interesting, that caught both of our eyes. The NFL is considering eliminating extra points. It's almost automatic, especially in the NFL. You rarely ever see one get blocked or a kicker shank one off the bar. Goodell mentioned this in a recent interview. There's only been five misses in 1,267 attempts. That's under a percent.
That's crazy.
Rarity
numbers.
Now.
And five of those misses, four of them were blocked.
And so they didn't even shank.
Yeah.
What do you think? What's Goodell going to do to replace this?
I honestly like the choice if they decide to go this way. Of course, that's not passed yet, and it has to get through the whole players union, through the whole board, everything yet. But it's just a thought or a train of thought that Roger Goodell has right now. But I like his proposal. He's saying that he wants to replace the point after touchdown and award teams an automatic 7 points for every touchdown they get. And then for if they want to go for the two-point conversion, which teams will want to do late in the game, it's they have the opportunity. They get those 7 points, but they have the opportunity to go for two. And if they get it, they get that eighth point. But if they don't get it, it's taken off the scoreboard and they're moved down to six. That makes sense to me. It's really just I think it's essential. I think it's a good idea. The extra point slows the game down, and no one really pays attention to it. So I think it's a great thing. What do you think?
I like it. It adds a little bit of diversity to the NFL. You can get a chance to get your two, or you take the automatic seven. I mean, if the NFL wants to speed up games, that will be a nice little process to do to completely eliminate that. But I don't know if it's really going to be taken into effect. I mean, that's been part of football forever now, so that'd be a drastic change. And it would be more strategy, though. Once you score, you know Brady, Manning, Rodgers, they're going to have a couple of great two-point plays in their back pocket. And that's more than an extra point. You're getting an additional one as well.
And I agree with that. With our last story, we're going to wrap it up real quickly. Here we have Paul George. There's been reports on him that he's of course, the star player for the Pacers, that he cheated on his girlfriend, who is, a little side note here, who is Doc Rivers' daughter, the coach of the Clippers' daughter. He cheated on her with a exotic dancer, got her pregnant, and offered her $1 million to abort the baby.
He's 23. That's a year older than me. This just shows you, you cannot use your fame and your wealth to get out of things. Paul George is an idiot, and you know what's even better? Clippers are going to play the Pacers. And if you're Doc Rivers, you hate Paul George.
Yeah,
that's your daughter.
Yeah.
DeAndre Jordan, why not go ahead and send an elbow to the ribs as he goes up for a layup? Unbelievable.
It is crazy to think about that.
That made me upset about Paul George.
Yeah, and that wrapped up our news. Now we'll be moving into the pick slate. Last week, Alex had his way with me, to say the least. He got 11 points. I had a measly 3, so I'm a little embarrassed, to say the least. This week, I'll try to turn around, so Alex is up 11-3. Our slate includes some Olympic action, some hockey, some basketball, women's basketball, some PacWest basketball, some NBA. So a lot of basketball, but also some hockey thrown in there. You want to start us off with the first game?
We got Portland Trail Blazers 35-14 at the Indiana Pacers, who are 38-10. Who are you taking?
This one's for 2 points, and I'm going to take the Pacers at home. How about you?
I'm going to take the Pacers as well, just because they are nearly unbeatable at home. That's going to be a long travel for Portland.
In the next game, we have the U.S. women's hockey team against the Canadian women's hockey team. That, of course, will be taking place on Wednesday. This one's for 3 points. What's your take?
Obviously some bias, but some validation behind this. U.S. women's hockey team has beaten the Canadians in the last 4 attempts. I'm going to go U.S. women's hockey for 3 points.
Yeah, and for that reason, like you just stated right there, I'm also going to take the women's hockey team over Canada in a huge game in the Sochi Olympics. That's what I'm doing. For the next game, we have the Bruins against the Blues, another hockey matchup, but this one in the NHL. Bruins 36-16-3. Blues are 37-12-6. Big game for hockey. It's going to happen on Thursday for 2 points. Which one are you taking?
Big game. I'm going to take the Bruins on the road. I think they get it done going on the road to St. Louis. What do you think?
I think the Blues are going to take this one at home. They're a very inconsistent team, but I know their goalie will play well, and he is going to pull through for the Blues. They are 37-12-6 for a reason. They're playing at home. I think they're going to win this one.
Next game, college basketball. Number 19, Oklahoma State. They're 16-6. Going on the road to number 15, Texas, who's 18-4 for 2 points. Big 12 matchup. Who do you got?
A big 12 matchup is right. I'm taking number 15-ranked Texas. They're at home. They're playing very well of late. Oklahoma State is starting to slip in the standings and slip in the rankings. Marcus Smart, not as good as we may think. I'm thinking Texas wins this game.
They are slipping fast. Texas beat the Jayhawks on Saturday at home by double digits. That really impressed me. I'm going to go Texas as well at home for 2 points.
In women's college basketball, we have Oklahoma State, the number 12 ranked team. So Oklahoma State doing very well in both men's and women's basketball at 19-3-3, going against Baylor, the number 7 ranked team, at 19-3 for 2 points. What's your take?
I really like Baylor. I'm taking Baylor. I honestly can't tell you too much about the Oklahoma State women's team, but I've seen Baylor play once on ESPN. I was impressed. They're 19-3. I'm going to take them for 2 points.
I'm also taking Baylor. I think we were watching the same game. I like Baylor and the way they play. 9-1 in conference. They get it done.
In our own PacWest matchup, it's going to be Azusa Pacific, 11-8, 7-6, going on the road to Cal Baptist, who's 19-1, 13-1 in conference. But Azusa did hand them their first loss. Cal Baptist for revenge. Who do you got? It's taking place on Saturday.
I'm taking Cal Baptist, even though I want to pick Azusa. I think Cal Baptist wins because they're at home. It's a revenge factor game. They're looking to really notch up that number one seed in PacWest play. I'm taking them. How about you?
I don't understand. If Cal Baptist gets beat by the same team twice, I'd be pretty shocked, especially at home. I think they got too much talent. I'm going to go Cal Baptist as well.
We just agreed. We disagreed on one game.
It was weird because we had so many disagreements last game.
I can't make up that much ground, listeners, on this one. But over time, it's a long year.
So
it's a long semester.
You took the lead earlier in our NFL picks. Anything can happen, especially with the point system. I love it. There'll be so many disagreements going on.
And our last segment of the day, we have our top five. And this week's top five is going to be top five Olympic sports, whether it be winter Olympic sports or summer Olympic sports. So your top favorite Olympic sports in general. And I'm going to start off this list. And we are doing this because of the Olympics, of course, just starting today and the opening ceremonies being tomorrow. It's a huge start for the 2014 Winter Olympics, so that's why we're doing the top five. My top five at number five is going to be soccer. I think I just love team sports in the Olympics, and I think soccer just kind of gives us another glimpse of like what we see in the World Cup. So I like seeing team soccer in there, even though USA tends to not be that well, do that well. But that's number five. And then number four, I have listed down speed skating, which is in the Winter Olympics, so you can see that. My favorite used to be Apollo Antetokounmpo, but now it's Shawnee Davis.
He was so good.
Yeah, now it's Shawnee Davis on the U.S. team. Make sure you check him out. He'll be in action this week. So the speed skating events are definitely interesting to see. At number three, I have the sprinting events in the Summer Olympics, the 100, the 200, the 400 meters. Those are always a good race to check out. And since I am a runner, I like watching people like Usain Bolt or like the Blade Runner, who's Pontius. No, it wasn't Pontius. It was Pistorius. Pistorius, that was his name, even though he's now in jail. But just interesting to see the sprinting events, the 100, 200, and 400, especially because a mile can be kind of boring while watching.
But if you're a runner, you like it all.
Yeah. I agree. And then number two, I have basketball. Even though USA tends to dominate every year, it's so interesting watching these guys put up 120 points in a game against European teams. They dominate every year, and I like seeing our USA basketball team like Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Chris Paul, Dwight Howard all playing on the same team. It's pretty fun to watch. It's like a little all-star team. So that's my number two. And number one, I have hockey. Definitely my favorite Olympic sport. USA-Canada rivalry. I'm hoping that we get to see that in the gold medal game again this year. We'll have to see. But those are my top five. How about you?
For mine, I love that list too, by the way, partner. I'm going to go number five, beach volleyball. I really enjoy seeing that.
Misty May
and Kerry Walsh especially. But men's and women's, unbelievable. I really like how they pair up and duke it out. Number four, I'm going with the gymnastics. The women's and men's gymnastics
that is pretty cool.
Very, very entertaining for me. I get a kick out of it. It's very competitive. All events really interest me. Number three, I'm with you. I love the hockey. So intense. The hockey season stops just so these players can go play
for their country.
Their country. And there's going to be players on the same team that face off against each other for their country representation. Unbelievable. I'm with you. I love the hockey. Number two is the downhill skiing and slope style. Plus, with the snowboarding now added, I love the downhill rush with Bodie Miller. There'll be some nice snowboarders that get added to the event. I love how they got to race around the flags and beat that time to try to edge each other out. And number one, my favorite, is the snowboarding slope style. The big air, guys going huge. Unfortunately, there will be no Flying Tomato, no Sean White.
Yeah.
That's a little disappointing, but I'm still going to enjoy it just as much without him in there. That rounds out my top five. And I thought this was a good top five.
Yeah, we had difference in opinions here. You had a lot of solo events. I had a lot of team events, so it was really cool to get a mixture of both. And the Olympics are a great time for people to watch and for you to root on your country or your favorite athletes. So make sure you check that out. It's going to be happening almost for 2 weeks now, starting today. They already finished the first day of action, so stay tuned on that on the television. That's going to do it for us at the Temple of Swan because we have an ILS speaker event. It is Isabel Allende. She's going to be doing the speaking, so we're going to have to wrap up here. If you want to listen to that, you can stay tuned here at radio.dominican.edu. She is a book author giving her speech here in Dominican campus. So that should be interesting for you listeners out there. But that does it for the Temple of Swan. I'm Mike Temple and Alex Swan.
Stay classy, everybody.
This is the radio.dominican.edu. And have a good night, folks.